This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum Podcast, where Welsh rugby matters. This is our last episode of the season. It's felt like a long old season. I don't know what the players must feel like, Dan, because I feel knackered after doing 49 of these.
Yeah, I'm whacked myself.
Yeah, you'll have put in the vast majority of those 49 you'll have been on board with as well.
Yeah, had a little bit of a gap, didn't I?
You did, yeah.
You gave me four or five off, maybe.
Yeah, well, I thought it was about time you
wrote me back
take
in.
You out of the limelight for a bit, go and rediscover your form, and come back in a bit more confident mood.
Yeah, confidence had gone
with
it.
Playing with a bit more freedom.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
that's where you bring in the grizzly old veterans like the Mighty Murph.
Oh yeah, we need the Murph, don't we? Need him back on a bit more.
That's it. But yeah, you got to limit his game time as well. You know.
He needs to be managed carefully.
Yeah, he's very much the Gavin Henson of
dual contract.
Dual contract
with the Wanderers and the attacking scrum.
That's it. Managing his time very, very carefully. But before we go off on a very short little summer break, we've got some really interesting stuff to get our teeth stuck into. A really interesting derby, first and foremost, in which the Ospreys came out on top. And therefore will qualify for the Heineken Cup, meaning the Scarlets miss out for the first time in their history. Did you enjoy that game, Dan?
I did enjoy it, yeah. I thought it was a bit of a humdinger, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Some of the rugby at times was a little bit loose and a little bit sloppy, but then on the flip side of that, you had some, some great plays as well. So it had it was a bizarre old game, but it was close, wasn't it? So you were on the edge of your seat, really, for the vast majority of it.
Certainly were, so we'll be getting to grips with that, seeing what it means. We're also going to have a bit of a roundup of all the regions and seeing if we can kind of pick any holes in their form and seeing what it might mean for next season. Some new coaches coming in we're going to have a quick look at. And of course, we'll be looking ahead to Rugby World Cup and the friendlies that were being played before that, what to expect from those. So we've got absolutely loads to get through in this episode. Before we do that, big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. Another great season with those guys on board. Hopefully we'll have a special with Scott at some point, potentially June, July time, where we're going to be going down to a new coffee shop opening out west, which will be good fun. And yeah, we'll get some quality guests lined up for that one. But in the meantime, make sure you get your hands on some great coffee at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, Dan, let's start with this Ospreys Scarlets game. As you said, they're real humdinger, a good one for the neutral, I thought. Plenty of excitement, plenty on the line. In a way, I kind of think that's what is often missing from Pro 14 fixtures, if you see what I mean. That was a game between two local rivals, plenty of needle, plenty of intensity, with a winner-takes-all scenario of the victors going on to the top tier of Europe. Do you think that's a fair assessment of that league?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how many times have we said that if we had more of that that type of game, yeah. it would be such a better league, wouldn't it? And I think you're right in what you say there, that the rugby at times wasn't anything really special, but the occasion and what was on the line meant, and the fact that it was a derby as well.
Yeah, you say that. There was plenty of good, there was some of that. I know it came from scrappy play, but, that break from Owen Watkin to put Giles in, and then the tackle from Halfpenny to...
Oh, there was some nice, really, moments.
Yeah.
But it was loose at times,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Was,
so
yeah.
It felt like it was a great game to watch, yeah. But I think a lot of it was the occasion as well and what was on the line. As
you
opposed
tell
to
that
the
in
quality
the half,
of the rugby there.
Everyone started to get quite tense, didn't they, on both sides? And you look at that passage of play where Sam Davis hooked the drop goal attempt from right in front of the post. Mm. He kind of really snatched at it. And you had these phases of play where both sides seemed to take a step back and realise what was on the line here and started kind of tensing up a little bit.
Yeah, that's I'd agree with you there. And the error count was high. Some of the stuff was a little bit comical at times as well. So it had a bit of everything,
yeah.
But it made for a really exciting game. It was compelling, and did I enjoy it? Yeah, I really did. It was a good game of rugby to watch.
Yeah, it certainly was. Out of the two, obviously Ospreys came out on top. Do you expect them next season? If you were to fast forwarding into next season now, do you think out of the two, they're the ones who are going to be better set, the best side in Wales to compete at European level?
Yeah, I think they will be. If you think of where the Ospreys were, sort of 5, 6, 7 games ago, they were in a real dark place, weren't they?
I think back particularly to that game they played at the Brewery Field that they lost to Ulster.
Yes.
It was a grim watch.
That stands out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was particularly poor, wasn't it? And there were a number of poor performances.
Yeah.
And they've really sort of built momentum, haven't they? They've gone back to what the Ospreys were about, which was a set piece dominant, orientated side. I think the pack has gone really well. And off the back of that, the backs have started to piece together some really nice plays. And a lot of it, for me, comes down to the centre partnership.
Yeah.
Watkin and Corey Allen. I know Watkin is getting a lot of the headlines, but I think Corey Allen has been quietly brilliant.
Yeah, I think with the aside of that bizarre crossfield kick that just didn't come off, I was really impressed with him again.
Yeah.
It looked much more like the player we expected to see when he burst onto the scene 5 or 6 years ago. And... yeah, he's got some really nice touches, and he seems to read the game well. Obviously, he's strong and
cuts a lovely angle.
Cuts a lovely angle.
Yeah, and they seem to be forming a decent partnership.
And you've got Scott Williams to come back into the mix at some point.
They look threatening out wide as well, don't they? With they got North obviously being North, and then Keelan. What a tackle that was as well!
It was amazing. Yeah, big tip of the cap to Lee Halfpenny for making that tackle.
It looked as if Keelan Giles had got away, didn't I? I thought he's away, and then suddenly...
Well, you'd back him at that point when... It was Dan Evans, wasn't it? It was straight from Watkin, wasn't it?
No, it was from Dan Evans.
Was it Watkin to Dan Evans?
I think so,
to Giles?
Yeah.
Struggling to remember that. But when he gets the ball, you would very much back him and think, right, quickest player on the pitch, absolute lightning quick, he's going to make this. Do you think he should he have put the ball back inside and looked for support, or is it just one of those outstanding pieces of defence?
I think it's just an outstanding piece of defence, really. I don't think you can really criticise Keelan Giles. He went for it, didn't he? Probably thought he was going to make it, and along with a lot of us. But just shows again, doesn't it, how good a fullback Lee Halfpenny is?
Yeah, it does.
You could watch that over and over again, couldn't you? Just how to make a tackle. So difficult as well in those circumstances, isn't it? The leap and the dive and just to grab him. I loved that.
Yeah, it was an outstanding bit of play on from attack and defence. Just to bring it back to the Ospreys for a moment, I thought they looked considerably more dangerous, particularly in the first half.
They did.
Than I've seen them look for a while, and I wonder whether this is a move now into what we were expecting when the new coaches turned up, particularly when Matt Sherritt turned up.
Yeah.
And... that was kind of a bit more what I was expecting from their back line. You drop Gareth Anscombe into the mix next season, that altogether, it would lead us back to that conclusion that they would be the best side in Wales equipped to have a decent crack at the Heineken Cup.
Yeah, looking at it comfortably, they're going to be the best side, I would say, at the moment, especially with Anscombe going in there as well. The backs look threatening and dangerous. Mm. I think just having, you know, Dan Evans is such a great player, isn't he? I mean, it is every single game. He makes 2 to 3 world-class, you know, I can't say world-class breaks, but they're just breaks that not many players can make, and it just makes such a difference, and he just changes the game time and time again. So with him there, Anscombe at 10, the pack is going exceptionally well, and you've got a centre partnership, which is dangerous. They've got the makings of a really, really decent side.
They do. I think, as with all of the Welsh sides, though, it comes down to squad depth. That really was the Ospreys fully loaded. You know, you look at the front row, you've got Nicky Smith and Scott Baldwin, a full international. You've got Tom Boater in there. You've got Wales' first choice lock partnership. Then you've got Cracknell, Tipperick. Cracknell's done a really good job, actually. Well, kind of a very unassuming job, but is doing it very well. And then Lydia at 8, of course, you know, Lyon.
Played well.
Alad Davis, Sam Davis. You know, this is them fully loaded. The rest of the back line you've spoken about already. The thing for me is going to be squad depth. And that is the tricky thing. Of course, it comes down to budgets and the ability to attract players. Project Reset hasn't helped this. So I think, as we said on last week's show, a lot of the sides are going to be going into next season without being able to have done the recruitment they would have liked. So that, for me, is going to be the difficult thing. So you've got to hope that maybe there's the odd canny recruit in the mould of a Sam Cross or a Luke Morgan, you know, someone who's kind of from outside of the scene, so to speak.
They have played a lot of these players, haven't they, in the early part of the season. They sort of played quite a lot of the fringe players so I wonder whether that will help. I mean, yeah, the Ospreys are you could say they're a totally different side when they've got Alan Wynne-Jones and Tipperick in.
They are on paper.
And yeah, it's going to come down to that, isn't it? When all those guys are back, you have Scott Williams in there as well. They're going to be totally different, aren't they? But there'll be a match for most sides, I would say, when fully loaded.
Well, that's the difference for me. And if we go back to the start, so you go back to last autumn, and there were a lot of games where Alan Clark was picking a very much a second string side fairly early on in the season, knowing that he had to target certain points. And we were critical at the time. I know I said, well, I certainly was. Fast forward to the end of the season, and they're looking in much better shape, and B, they've secured the Champions Cup spot, which would have been their objective for the season. So in a way, you've kind of got to say fair play for what seemed like an unpopular decision at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember saying that I thought he was picking and choosing the right games then, but what was odd was the way in which they were playing those games. Mm. And, you know, I know a lot of the Ospreys fans were bitterly disappointed, and just Welsh rugby fans as well, with the way in which the game seemed to be being played, which was just this huge emphasis on kicking. But kicking in a lot of it was aimless, wasn't it? Mm. It wasn't sort of kicking to build pressure and you know, it just seemed all a little bit clueless. But that first 10 minutes, the Ospreys, they looked so dangerous.
I think they picked up on this in the commentary, but they very much seemed to be to have simplified their game plan a little bit and just said, right, we're going to have 3 phases, see what's on, and if there's nothing on, then we'll kick. And that seemed to be working pretty well, actually.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, and they did kind of run that system all the way through, didn't they?
I think towards the end of the game it might have moved a bit away from 3 phases, but
nonetheless, it served them well.
Let's have a look at the Scarlets, though. Bitterly disappointing season for them, off the back of 2 very good seasons prior to this. End of the Pivac era, it's a bit of a sad state of affairs to kind of go out on this. There's been a lot of stuff flying around on social media about Pivac and, you know, what to expect as Wales coach. A new coach coming in at the Scarlets now. How much work do you think Brad Moore's gonna have to do, or is it a question of there's a quality set of players there? There'll be a lot coming back from injury and a couple of new recruits, fresh start, kind of forget everything that we've seen in the last couple of months.
Yeah, it's for me, it's not really panic stations. They've got massively hit by injury, the injury list, and it completely killed their game and any momentum. They just couldn't build momentum, basically. So I think the end of the season can't come quick enough.
Well, it's happened, is it?
And yeah, it has, yeah. they just need to get the new coaches in, don't they? Start building again, get the guys that are injured back. And I think they'll be... There's a lot of decent players there, isn't there? It was just a very, very difficult 12 months. The combination of them losing key players, you know, to go in elsewhere, and then the injury, then they got hit with a ridiculously big injury list.
And they're back getting the Wales job, which I think must have been somewhere.
That probably didn't help as well. But it was like three or four key things, wasn't it, that just went against them. And with the squads that all the Welsh regions have got, if you pick up that many injuries, you can't do a great deal.
Something that was mentioned again in the broadcast of the game was they've struggled to turn ball over this season, and that for me has been a really big thing, because the way they play, those backs, they rely on having that bit of space in order to punish sides, and they did that the season before. I think a lot of that will go down to, obviously, James Davis has been injured for a lot of the season, Tyke Byrne going, John Barkley going, and that for me has been a really big difference for them, and has meant that it's been a struggle of a season. Yeah. That's a big impact for me.
Yeah, those three guys would turn over huge amounts of ball, wouldn't they? And when you look back at the number of the Scarlets tries, it was exactly that, wasn't it? It was turnover ball almost anywhere on the park, and then they catch outsides, and another person who was involved invariably in those was Steph Evans.
Yeah.
Sort of picking up a weak shoulder or just creating, beating a couple. He'd always beat two or three players, get them on the front foot, and then and then he'd get an offload. He'd always get an offload as well. And we haven't seen the offloading game from the Scars, I think, because they've been on the back foot and the pack's been under pressure as well.
I think that's it. And so, it's not just the turnover ball. If you're not able to slow the ball down and the opposition are getting quick ball, they can hang on to it. Whereas before, if you're putting that much pressure on them, even if they're not turning the ball over, they don't want to be hanging on to it, and they'll kick the ball away. And if there is that opportunity when the ball's kicked loose, you knew that Scarlet side would be more than happy to run it back.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think that maybe with the Scarlets losing those three players, were they able to change the game plan? Because the way in which they were playing very much was centred around those guys. And I don't know whether they were slow to adapt or whether it was a transition or what, but it was definitely a difficult year. And you know, in the flip side to the Ospreys, when you see like Nicky Smith, who just seems to be getting better and better, hard to believe he's only 23, and then picking up a 4-year contract.
Not many of them knocking around.
There's not, is there?
It's really not.
You know, you'd give him more probably if you could, because he is absolutely, he's brilliant, isn't he? We're
definitely going to talk about him later.
The turnovers that he creates, and then Owen Watkin didn't get a huge amount of turnovers in that game, but he'll often get a turnover as well. The sides do tend to get tries off that, you know, that sort of way of playing, don't they? And it's been a tough season. But it's not panic stations for me for the Scarlets. They'll be back.
It's interesting how you point out Steph Evans. I think you could look at Reece Patchell as well as a player who's been out of form, and he was very important to what they did last season. Dan Evans spent a long period on the sidelines this term. And again, to go back to that previous point, it showcases the lack of depth in these setups. And when you've got lots of injuries and the odd player like that who's out of form, and Pivot hasn't been shy of dropping any of those figures, that's where it can really hit you, and they can really, really struggle. So again, that, you know, squad depth is going to be a very difficult thing for all of the sides. But I think, I think on the whole, Brad Moore will be looking to come in and have... add some real fresh momentum. It just looked like a side that was ready to kind of transition out of the Pivac era. Not in a nasty way, but it must be difficult when you've got, you know, three games to go till the end of the season, and you know that he's going out to something different. I don't know. For me, it feels like it's the right time, and there will be a real positive impact. I don't know a great deal about him as a coach, but there seems to be a lot of people who talk very highly about him, and he comes with a good pedigree. and I think there is the core of a really interesting side there to play with. So I think we can expect to see a better Scarlet side next season than we have seen this term.
Yeah.
Should quickly wrap up this first half by talking about the other regions also. So the big news, well, I say the big news, the worst kept secret in Wales this week, Dean Ryan finally announced as Dragons Director of Rugby. Do you think there's any, you know, are you the kind of person who will pick out that distinction and between a Director of Rugby and head coach? It doesn't look like there's going to be a head coach coming in with him. You know, is that to you, is it just like kind of a bit of semantics, or is there actually a real big difference in whether you appoint a head coach or a director of rugby and who calls the shots?
Looks slightly better on LinkedIn, yeah.
No, I think he's director of rugby, isn't he? He's head coach, isn't he? He's going to be head coach, director of rugby. He's probably going to have more, I suppose, more input in the, I don't know, does that mean he's going to have a bit of more of an input in the sort of business side of it slightly? I don't know. I think it's just the way in which he wants to be called, because he's got a lot of experience.
I think there's a big difference between a director of rugby and
a
coach.
Well, there is.
Yeah.
But I don't think there is here, though. Well, there isn't at the moment, because the Dragons haven't got a head coach alongside the director of rugby.
No, they haven't.
There should be a director of rugby and then your head coach. But that's not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not going to happen. By the look of it, it isn't going to happen. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. However, I think that he clearly knows what he's getting himself in for. He wouldn't take himself away from a cushy upstairs job at the RFU in order to immerse himself in this if he didn't think that there was the potential to do something. Now, we've heard this before, and we were probably saying a similar thing when Jackman took over, but I think he has to come in first and foremost in that director of rugby role. And that, for me, includes a lot about recruitment and the framework that you put in place for all of the coaches around you. So the style of rugby that you want, the kind of players you want to produce for the Dragons that will fit your style of play, that all comes from a director of rugby downwards, in my opinion. Mm. Now, you're right, normally alongside that you would have a head coach.
Do you think that might happen later?
I don't know. I think what you might see is Kerry Jones taking over as head coach at some point later in time. Now, at the moment, they've obviously said that Kerry isn't experienced enough to do that. Well, they haven't outwardly said it, but that's what this appointment would suggest. Yeah. Now, I think Dean Ryan, along with bringing that experience of the stuff away from the pitch, he's also a very good coach. And he's also not afraid to get his hands dirty and, you know, hands on the tackle pad. And I think at the moment, the Dragons are going to be wanting him to put in a shift in both on and off the field. And it's not going to be a small task, but I think in the long run, you might see Kerry Jones taking on if everything goes according to
plan. I could see that, because I don't think Dean Ryan would come in if there wasn't a pretty good plan in place.
I'm not sure there is. I think he's been brought in to try and help shape that plan.
Oh yeah, I think he'll be there to help with that plan. But there must be a plan that's been put out to him beforehand, because otherwise they can't say, look, we want you to come in, and then we're going to build a plan around, you know, purely around you. Maybe that is the case, but okay, or a financial plan then. So a financial plan.
The financial plan seems to be Buttress. We need to get this team privately owned again.
Yeah,
that seems to be the plan. Now, obviously, he's got fantastic experience in terms of, you know, his business acumen is excellent, and he's, you know, as well as doing Just Eat, he's part of a venture capitalist groups and things like that. So you would think he'd be well connected in order to seek investment into the outfit. Now, again, as much as he may be a Gwent lad, he's not going to be doing that if he doesn't think that there is significant potential within the region. Now, that's for him to decide and to take care of.
Yeah.
But he seems to think that the best way of doing this is to have the Dragons privately owned again.
But Ryan will be, you know, he's a smart cookie, isn't he? He'd definitely be privy to all these sorts of things, I would have thought.
So financially, I think that's going to be Buttress's job.
Yeah.
And then the kind of everything from the kind of the ethos within the club to the style of play to how coaches are developed, I think will all stem from
and he'll
we'll have Ryan's hallmarks.
So his role will probably change.
If everything goes right,
that's what it seems to look like, doesn't it? From the outside, anyway. All pretty exciting, really.
It is very exciting, but in the short term, I think he's got to take that group of players that he's got. I can't see very many players coming in. Potentially a 10.
Yeah, it's tracksuit on for now, isn't it?
It's exactly that. Tracksuit on. Leave
the blazer in the drawer.
Yeah, I think that's it. He can have the blazer for the press conference, but he's going to need the tracksuit and the whistle and the tackle pads in order to get these boys in shape for next season.
Is he the man to do it?
I said it last week, said it the week before. I'm perfectly happy with that as an appointment. I honestly don't think we could have got anyone better, realistically. Yep. I think he's got that experience. You know, I think other than Ryan, we would have been taking a punt on a Graham Rowntree or on, to a certain extent, if we could have afforded it, a Robin McBride. Excellent coach that he is, does not have that experience of picking a side. Dean Ryan does. And he's got the experience of coaching. So for me, I think it is the right appointment. Let's quickly touch on Cardiff Blues before we go to the break. So big news this week for them is that Nick Williams, they finally announced that he's got himself another extension, which any Blues fan will tell you is really good news.
That is a massive boost, isn't it?
Yeah.
He seems to be, is it me or is he looking younger every time he pops up on the screen? He looks fresh, doesn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He's looking fresh. He's playing.
He's playing.
That's a mass. I think that's going to lift every single Blues fan because it's. It's looking a little threadbare, isn't it, on the squads?
It is in the pack, certainly.
Yeah, and he'll be.
And we were saying a number of times 258 is really where they've been lacking depth. So you imagine if he'd have gone.
Yeah,
and then you're reliant on. You know, really playing Navidia 8, who's going to be off with Wales at the start of the season. You know, then really there's not a huge amount of other options. You know, you've got Seb Davis within there, and then you've got the youngsters knocking around the squad also. So I think it's a massive signing.
Give the squad a huge lift as well to have somebody of that experience, and he seems to be a real character, doesn't he? And like almost the heartbeat of the Blues side.
So yeah.
I think it'd be more than you'd lose him. You'd lose the character as well.
Yeah, I agree.
And that'd be probably almost bigger than losing him as a player. So yeah, that's big news. He's certainly going to be needed.
Yeah, I agree. And just to touch on that point about the character, I always think, because you sometimes see like stuff, you know, we put a couple of posts out on Twitter and on Facebook about it, and the vast majority of people, particularly if they're Blues fans, are saying, this is a great sign-in. Fantastic to have him sticking around. What a great character, what a great bloke. But then there's one or two who kind of say, oh, yeah, it's blocking the progression of a Welsh player, a young Welsh player. And I really don't see it that way. In modern rugby, you need a number of players in different positions. And what youngster isn't going to benefit from having Nick Williams in and around the club?
Yeah,
strikes me as the kind of guy who's going to bring through young eights in the academy, and they will really learn from him. And what a brain to get hold of, you know, as well as being a big hitter and stuff like that. He's a canny operator, isn't he?
Oh, he is,
he's wily as you like.
Lovely offload, strong over the ball. Yeah, as a young player, you'd pick up huge amounts from him. And I do think he'd be one of those players as well that would share all that he's got, as opposed to, you know, turning up and then leaving. He doesn't seem like that type of character, does he? So, yeah, you need... Are there very many? How many young number eights are there really that can cut it at that level?
Yeah,
you know, there isn't. They're not around. They don't exist.
Yeah.
So you need a wily, canny operator at eight. And I think the Cardiff Blues would be so much better off for having him around. And any youngster that's in and around him will feed off that. Really,
absolutely agree. Right, in the second half, we are going to switch focus and we're going to talk about Wales. As we head into the World Cup, which is getting closer and closer and closer, those warm-up games are not far away. So all of that is coming up after this quick break. Welcome back to the Attacking Scrum podcast. Let's talk about Wales now, Dan. Rugby World Cup, I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than this, does it? As fantastic as the Grand Slam has been, and that has undoubtedly been the highlight of this season, it just doesn't get any more exciting than Rugby World Cup for me.
Yeah, Grand Slam seems like so long ago, doesn't it? Yeah, it's gonna be great now, isn't it? The build up to the World Cup. I can't wait for it. Only wish we were going, to be honest.
Well, yeah, that's it. Anyone who does have any ways of getting us out there, be it a sponsorship gig or some kind of hooky job as a courier, we're more than happy to explore options. I did listen to an old podcast of ours from this time 1 year ago, so it's basically been a year since the Argentina tour, or the start of that.
And digging out the old ones.
Yeah, a little dig out of the old ones. So that was yeah, just shy of a year ago. How far do you think Wales have come during that time?
A long way. Long, long way. I think we look back at if we go back a year ago, we were definitely starting to build some decent depth, weren't we? But there was quite a few players that we just hadn't seen, I suppose, at the highest level. And we're in a lot stronger place, aren't we? Even you think it's not that long ago, is it, a year? And how can a lot change from then? But I think a lot has. I think we've developed a way in which a couple of different styles that we can play now. We've also seen, if we just look at the back row, for instance, we've built some depth in ways that we didn't probably know existed, really. And, you know, and so, yeah, all over the park, I think we're in a different shape.
The depth is massive for me, and we don't know what's going to happen at the World Cup. But if we go on to have a strong World Cup, I think you can definitely look back at this tour, the tour 12 months ago to Argentina, and say it had a significant effect. And for that reason, it is the squad depth. Look at those players like Adam Beard and Dylan Lewis, who really kind of impressed on that tour in test match environment, away from home, in Argentina. Josh Adams would be another one. They're all in the starting 23 of Wales' sides during the Grand Slam, and you'd expect them to be pushing for that during the World Cup as well. So I think it was a really, really important tour that demonstrated that we do have players around the fringes who can go on and push for positions within the starting lineup and on the bench.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's crucial, isn't it? In a way,
it is, yeah. It's so easy to think, isn't it? I was only 12 months ago. We were in a really good place then anyway. But we were looking lightweight in areas. And we've unveiled like some key players over the last 12 months. Yeah, Josh Adams being one of them. We've got a you know, the guy can't stop scoring, can he? And I don't think many sides are going to want to face him. Then in the pack as well, yeah. So we're going into this World Cup, aren't we, in probably the best shape we've been in. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a great deal easier, because I think there's going to be a lot of sides that are going to be really, really up for this. It's going to be so competitive out there, isn't it? And there's always a couple of surprise packages, aren't there, that come in. And like you said before, you've got the weather to contend with. It'll catch a few people out. And
oh, yeah. It's really, really difficult to predict going into Rugby World Cup. It's very easy to look at Wales and say, oh, Grand Slam champions, that's gonna mean that they're definitely going to go out there and perform. And it doesn't mean that. You look at how Six Nations form translates to Rugby World Cup form, and it does not always follow suit. So you could well have a side who underperformed in Six Nations or in Rugby Championship who goes on to have a really, really good World Cup. And so Wales will have to guard against complacency, but you would imagine that Warren Gatland isn't the kind of coach who will allow that to creep in.
Yeah, you won't allow complacency to creep in, will you? I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is that we've seen players like, you know, like Josh Adams, I suppose, Navidi just being... It's so difficult to not see the Welsh side now with Navidi not being in it. Players like that you... We've seen a sort of new... Like a new breed of sort of Welsh player, in a way, that... I don't know, you... We've just been... You know, sort of when you look at... I don't know where I'm going with this.
I was looking at you thinking, I hope there's something up top here.
No, there's not. It's gone.
All right. I tell you what I think is really important about this.
Yeah.
We've spoken about squad depth. And
it's come back to me.
Good. So I'll look forward to that.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tweet us it later.
Yeah.
What I think is really important about squad depth is we're talking about it in the first half of the show, where you have injuries and you need to rotate in a club environment.
Yeah.
because that's, you know, rugby will take its toll. For the Rugby World Cup, I think it's really, really important because you need to create an environment of competition for places. And you spoke about the back row. Look at that back row. No one is going to want to falter in any way because there is someone there ready and waiting to take that shirt off you. Yeah. Go back as recently as the autumn, and Dan Lydiate had that number six shirt on his back. Now, in days gone by, you go back to the 2000s, even go back to kind of, you know, 2010, 2009, that kind of period, there are certain positions you'd look at and you go, well, we know he's going to be playing there. And a player like Dan Lydiate would have had that shirt, you know, almost for the rest of his career in the 90s and the 2000s. Whereas right now, he is in a position where he's not going to be going to the World Cup. He's only 31 years old, he's got a load of caps, he's a test lion, what, twice over, is that right?
Yeah.
No, it's not right, is it? But he's test lion nonetheless.
Yeah.
And he's now in a position where he's not going to make it to the World Cup. So that competition for places is so, so crucial, I think, because it just creates this environment where players have to go out and perform to their absolute best. And those extra 1 or 2% are the kind of things that can get you into World Cup semi-finals.
What's going to be really interesting is making sure that we get the selection right for the for the squad, because there's going to be some top players that are going to be left behind.
Oh yeah, there
are. And you just hope that we get that right, and we'll never know, will we? In hindsight, will be hindsight's a wonderful thing. But that I can you imagine selecting?
Is there anyone else you'd want to make those calls ahead of Gatland?
What, that would make the
coach,
final?
Yeah, is there anyone else you'd want as a coach to make that call as to who goes and who starts each game?
No, you not really. He seems to make the right decision, doesn't he, on selection?
I think that's undoubtedly one of his strong points.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what the influence of the other, the other countries around him as well, because I can't imagine they're remaining completely silent on any of this either. So it's a team effort. But when you look at Gatland and where he's been and what teams he's been involved with, he makes the right calls, doesn't he? But this is going to be the hardest. This will be the hardest one yet for him.
I think it is the hardest yet, but I think it's the hardest for the right reasons, because we've got a number of options. You'd rather it this way.
You'd rather have it than
say,
not.
Yeah. You know, do you know what? James Davis doesn't go, or Ellis Jenkins doesn't go. Both of which are very conceivable at this moment in time, and that's really sad for those players as individuals. But it's a whole world apart from even 4 years ago.
Yeah. No, it is. Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned to you before, I think Gatland is. He'll know the vast majority of who he wants to take already. Can't let that on, can he? But
I think he will. But
I know we're in different camps.
I think he can.
We're in different camps on that, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it comes down to the training camp that those players are in. He's going to want to have a look at them, and he's going to want to see that player who is getting up 5 minutes earlier than he would do normally, or half an hour earlier. And
do you think? I think Gatland will be the player. Say there's a player that is getting up 5 minutes late, I think he'll be giving him a nudge, saying, "You make sure you're up 5 minutes here, because I know what you can do." You know, in a way, I just think he's.
Yeah, I do. But I also think he wants to see it come from the players. He wants to see that player who's training extra hard in order to get that spot. That player who's taking. When we've spoken to Kai and Will in the past, and they've spoken about the way that Alan Wynne-Jones trained when he was, when he was 20 years old. Just coming into the Ospreys, he trained like he was playing a test match. And I think that's what Gatland and Edwards are going to want to be seeing in this training camp, is players out there, you know, really, really fighting like blooming SAS selection in order to get their place on the plane. I really do. And that can only be a healthy thing.
Yeah. I wonder whether they'll use that as, say there is somebody that's coming up and just literally pushing. It's what they're going to want, isn't it? They're going to want that person that's pushing, I suppose, the more experienced. They're all experienced, aren't they, in their own right? But I wonder whether they'll use that as sort of fire, really, to fuel on and push on some of the guys if they do drop off slightly. In like an individual one-to-one, I don't know whether they do this, but when they sit them down individually and analyse their performance as they're going along, whether it's all team. It's all sort of, team-based.
See, I think it's like a Lions environment where you know that on a Lions tour, you've got players, someone is after your jersey. And you've got this balancing act of creating an environment where you're being ultra competitive to get in the test team, but you're also creating this environment where everyone's got each other's backs and it's a happy camp. And that's, you know, that's a difficult thing to do. And then, you know, therefore, having someone like Gatland is a bonus, having done two Lions tours as a head coach and done one as a...
I just think it's different. Stuff. I don't know why, I just think it's different.
I think it is, when you're that far away from home.
I think he knows. I honestly think that he knows who he wants to take. And almost down to if, you know, say Navidi was had a poor running on the train, I still think he'd back him to, you know, 6, 7, 8. And I know that's probably an example that isn't the greatest, because he's, you know, who else can play 6, 7, 8? But I just get that impression with this World Cup and this Welsh setup. I know it's different with the Lions because, which is a weird thing to say, because some of the players say, well, there's no point me going on that training camp then. But I do feel there's players going that aren't, maybe they'll even know that they're not, it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to shift some of the guys that are higher up the rankings.
I'm not saying it's not incredibly difficult, but I think
it's doable. You think it's doable?
I think you'll go into it with an open mind. You know, look, you're right. There are certainly, Alwyn Jones isn't going to have a dodgy training session and he all of a sudden is looking at it thinking, do you know what, let's maybe leave him out of this one. His best years are behind him. You know, that's not going to happen for a number of reasons. But yeah, I think there are certain players who are probably guaranteed their slot on the plane. But I think he's going to be wanting to see a load more from every player. You know, let's say one of the wingers starts training and isn't taking it to the best level of training. There is someone else in that squad, even if it's not a player who, you know, even if there are players who miss out, which there will be, there'll be someone in that squad of 31 who can come in and do the job and take that shirt off them. So they won't allow complacency to creep into that.
Do you think that a number of the selections will come down to them maybe looking at combinations then? You know, someone's teaming up really well with, say the back three, or... Yeah, that's something we hadn't quite seen him working out that well with those three. And I just think it's difficult on the training setup because it's training.
I know you say this, but I think you can see so much attitude in training.
You can.
You know, that's the thing that I think impresses people. And that's the bit we don't get to see. You don't get to see the training. You get to see them playing in, you know, pro 14 games, which, as we said, can lack intensity. Would you rather see someone, you know, tear apart the Dragons and score four tries in a Pro 14 game? Or would you actually rather see them going absolutely hell for leather in a training camp that has got their World Cup place on the line? That's where I think you see the depth of someone's soul. You know, where there's no defence to exploit. There's no chinks in the armour. It's not, Dragons have brought on an 18-year-old tight head prop who I'm going to give an absolute going over to here. There's no weakness.
But they're all going to be fit. They're all going to be chomping for it. And you can look good in training, can't you? You can look good. I just think...
That's what I'm saying. I don't think you can here. I think you have to fight hard to look good in training.
In the drills, though, you can look sharp. That's why I think a lot of it will be sewn up, just because there won't be the game intensity and there won't be those matches. I think that Gatland and the coaches will have had to look and say that this guy's performed at the highest level in, you know, these club games, these international games. And so, look, he has looked really dangerous in training. He wants it. He's first up. But I just think we've got to go. And there'll be all those sorts of chats when they're in. We'll have to see.
We will have
to see. Maybe it's a little bit like this when they're on the selection.
It could be, yeah, I hope so. Let's bring it to... It just reminds me of that. Again, it just reminds me of those Lions DVDs where you know, Jim Telfer talking about, the courage of our conviction to go with Baki. Let's bring it on to those games. Warm-up games against England and Ireland, both at home and away from home. How do you treat those? They're the closest thing you're ever going to get to a friendly in international rugby. Do you treat it as trying to protect that winning streak, or is this your opportunity to experiment how you play this down if you're Warren Gatland?
It's a it's a bit of both, really, isn't it? It'd be lovely to keep that momentum, really, of winning. I do think it's important, actually.
Do you?
Because, yeah, I think psychologically it gives you something. So they're not going to want to lose. But I think Gatlin can work that into sort of, if he's going to have a, you know, he's going to try something slightly different, then he'll still be able to play on the fact that, you know, you guys have been given the opportunity, and we don't be the ones that lose this winning streak. Because how good would it be to go into that World Cup just without having lost? Because I just think you probably push yourself to a beyond you know, places that you didn't think you'd maybe go, because you just don't want to give that up. So I think psychologically it's quite a big thing.
Oh, I agree.
But it's not absolutely the be-all and end-all, is it?
No, and if you're going to lose that winning streak,
yeah,
would you rather lose it in a Six Nations campaign?
Exactly, yeah.
Or would you rather lose it in a... You've almost got a free shot here.
Yeah.
You can either go into the World Cup and say, look at this winning streak, still undefeated, or you go, well, yeah, right, we lost it in the Rugby World Cup warm-up games. Yeah, so it's a slightly difficult one. But again, to go back to the point about selection, look back at 2011, Rhys Priestland got himself the starting berth as fly half during those warm-up games. You know, he did a very late call-up. He's due to be playing 15 that game.
He did. Do you think we're in a slightly different place now than
that? Yeah, I do. But, you know, look at the players he displaced. You know, it wasn't like you would arguably say, going into that World Cup, that Stephen Jones and James Hook were more established at 10 than Gareth Anscombe or Rhys Patchell are right now. Obviously, Dan Bigg is a slightly different scenario.
The other thing with Priestland, though, if his confidence is high, he's playing really well, doesn't he? The way in which he gets the back line moving is...
Yeah.
You could say, even before then, that we knew that his passing game was exceptional. Mm. And if he was in a pretty good place within himself, he'd be really dangerous.
Mm.
And obviously, he found his confidence, didn't he? Found his form. And then the rest is history, I suppose. He had that shirt, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think we know... I don't know, it just seems slightly different now than back then.
All right, scenario. Wales-England at Twickenham, which, although, yeah, admittedly, it's a friendly, there's still always that. You're always going to want to beat England, especially at Twickenham, because those wins can be few and far between. I see Jared Evans has a blinder at 10. Absolute blinder. Gets those backs, you know, almost finds something outside in that we didn't even think was possible. Runs in a try for himself. Great kicking out of hand.
Anything, you know, unbelievable tackling.
Right. But, you know, could he play himself into that 10 shirt off the back of, you know, one or two performances in these games?
For me, no. For you?
Can anyone? You know, that's an
example. They might as well not play him at the moment, the way I'm going.
Yeah.
I think certain players...
All right, different scenario. All the back, you know, we've spoken about the back row, but there's an opportunity here where Ross Moriarty, for example, who's been, again, stronghold of the Grand Slam side, very dependable whenever he's pulled on a Wales shirt, could very, very easily find himself on the plane to Japan, but without a place in the match day 23. That's the kind of scenario that I think is going to be really big in training and then really big in these environments. If he gets the nod and he's out there, you know, he's out there playing against Ireland or England, he's going to want to take his opponent's head off in order to prove that I'm not going to be the one that misses out here. Tell Toby he's not playing or tell Navidi he's not playing. It won't be me.
Yeah, I think a lot of it will come down to who the individual matchup. So, you have the two supposed best eights are going up against each other, or they're trialing someone, then that will have a massive effect.
If Jared
Evans is playing against Owen Farrell, and
yeah,
you know, and their main back line, then yeah, maybe there is a case there.
But so you think Moriarty's almost got to go and deliver a performance that outshines Vunipola,
yeah,
versus a performance that outshines maybe a Mark Wilson.
Yeah, really. If they're trialing somebody at number 9 and he goes unbelievably well.
Yeah, or a Sam Simmons or something.
Yeah, and it'll still be impressive, but I just think that because if they're playing one person, say the they got their first choice back line, but the pack is second string. If Jared Evans playing 10 has a blinder, he's not going to be under the same pressure because of that pack. So they'll be weighing up all those different points. That's why I just think those defending games are very, very difficult to sort of take a huge amount from. In certain positions, okay, it may be slightly easier.
Okay. If everyone is fit, will the Grand Slam 15 be the starting lineup for the first game of the World Cup? You know, or that game against Australia, for example, that real big first game.
Yeah.
Really? I'm not having it. Mate, Nicky Smith, for one, I think he's... This is why it's so exciting for me.
Oh,
Go on.
I thought, are we starting our best side against Australia? I've misread it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I'm saying Nicky Smith is in that now rather than Rob Evans.
Yeah, no, I thought you said, are we starting our best side? And I'm saying, yeah, we are.
I'm saying, are we starting our Grand Slam side?
Sorry, right. Well, the vast majority of them. I would, Nicky Smith for me is in there. Absolutely, definitely.
But this is why it's so exciting for me, because I think players have got that opportunity to really cause a bit of an upset. And if Nicky Smith has two or three outstanding performances in those warm-ups, he might well get the nod for that game.
Yeah, that position.
Or Rob Evans likewise. You know?
That position, you could maybe see it, couldn't you? It being more clear, it being sort of more interesting then between.
Yeah.
I would go with Nicky Smith.
I would at the moment. I think he's doing such a great job in the loose and in the tight that he's looking at a great option. These are brilliant options to have.
Yeah, I mean, they are great options. You can't go past, because it was his scrummaging, wasn't it, that let him down. That let him down previously, probably. But he's really worked on that. Yeah. He seems to have a scrummaging players left, right, and centre, doesn't he? And then the turnovers. I mean, he's always been good at them, but he seems to have taken them to a new level as well. And only at 23, in the front row. With those turnovers, we can't, because he'll create a number of tries for us, won't he? Just completely changes the momentum of the game. And when he's over there, you can't shift him.
Well, tries
like Nick Williams over the ball.
Yeah, he is. And it's not just tries, is it? It can be, it's the penalty that gives you that 6-point cushion. It's the penalty when you're deep in your own half and 16 phases. That's the one that gets you out of jail and they don't breach the whitewash. So
also his carrying as well.
Yeah, it's good. I think his carrying's always been quite good. I thought he looked very mobile.
Yeah, he does that spin, doesn't he? Which is quite a sort of, this is like a trademark of his.
Yeah. It's a bit of a Jonah Lomu rugby type move, isn't it?
Yeah, he's sort of... Yeah, I can imagine you doing that.
Yeah, not so much. So I think using it, he's very much an interesting one to watch. But this is it. I think there could be these matchups all over the park. I think Gatland's really excited about pitting them against each other, if I'm honest. I think there's a core of that side who he knows he will... You know, Ken Owens will be in there. Alan Wynne-Jones will be in there. Who else will be in there? Yeah, John and Davis will be in there. Lee Halfpenny will be in there, I would have thought. When he's back to
last thing players. I would have thought. That's where it comes in, isn't it? I would have thought. But
this is nuts. Actually, just thinking back to Grand Slam, no Halfpenny.
I know. Yeah.
You know, this whole thing is crazy.
Then you've got the number eight is. They're all going to be. Not because, Faletau, say.
Yeah.
Because he's in.
Tell you what, Dan, bit of fun to finish.
Because he's got the injury.
Yeah.
Moriarty. he's not going to want to not start, is he? Then you've got Naveed,
Should we predict? Now, this is not what our lineup would be, but let's predict the side for that game against Australia, which is the real humdinger of a. That's your most important group stage game. It's almost a knockout game. I'm going to write this down. And then we'll see how right we get it in a few months' time. So, do you want to start with loose head prop?
I usually start with 15, don't I?
You've just said you're going to pick Nicky Smith. I've just given you a really easy one. Just say it.
Nicky Smith.
Right. Jeez, Dan. Right. Ken Owens. He'll pick Ken Owens, definitely.
He will. But Elliot D. I'd like to see that in training, mind.
Yeah, I would. I think it'd be an intro, like two properly fierce competitors. Tom Francis will start tight end, yeah. I think, unless something massive changes. Yeah,
can't see.
Obviously, Alan Jones will be in the second row, and Skipper alongside.
It's good, Beard, isn't it?
I think Beard is. Yeah, yeah. He's making that. He's making that shirt his own now.
Enjoyed his tussle with Jake Ball.
Yeah, that was interesting, actually. Yeah,
what was he saying to him? I couldn't make it out.
A couple of lookers, though, aren't they? Right. Anyone else? Right, so Foxy will play again. If everyone's fit, Foxy will play outside. I'm skipping around here just because there are certain positions that
you've got to, you want to put him in.
Ian Hadley-Parks will be with him?
I do, actually.
But I'm interested. I'm excited by Watkins.
He is. Yeah. He's going to push him every bit of the way, isn't he? Mainly because of the 10 choice.
Yeah, that is.
I think Hadley Parks will.
All right. Who is that 10? Anscombe?
I think Anscombe, yeah.
I think, yeah, it's probably likely.
But Bigger, never ever write him off.
No, I absolutely agree. Right, North and Adams on the wings?
Yep.
Which then? Who plays fullback, Dan? Sanjay or Halfpenny?
Against Australia, Halfpenny.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Yep.
I think I agree, which means that on the bench, you have Liam Williams in the number 23 shirt. Good God.
It's not right, is it?
Good God. Scrum off?
Gareth.
Okay.
You agree?
I think I would agree, yeah. As you know, I'd love to see Thomas Williams go on a streak where he scores 9 tries in those warm-up games and gets the shirt. But so this guy, 6, 7, 8. Moriarty, Faletau, Tipperick,
okay.
Navidi, anyone else who you realistically think will be in the mix there? See, I think Ellis, if he's fit, but I'm a bit worried about his fitness now.
I can't see Ellis being fit, can you?
I'm a bit worried about that.
Yeah.
Shingler, I think Shingler might miss out, if I'm honest.
It's going to be hard for him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having not played any games, they're going to have to do something exceptional, aren't they? Let's go with 7 first, yeah?
I'm not sure that's any easier.
For me.
With Tipperick.
Tipperick 7.
Right, but we're looking at Gatland's mind here. I could honestly see a situation where you have Moriarty, Faletau, Navidi. I don't think it will be, but I can't
leave out Tipperick.
I don't think he would feel like... he'd make that call if he thought it was right. I think he rates Navidi so highly. Here's what I think will happen. Navidi, Tipperick, Faletau, and Moriarty misses out.
That's what I think.
Is that what you think?
That's what I think could happen. Unless Faletau can't make it.
Right, working on the assumption that anyone who's in that training squad is going to be fully fit, which we hope they will be.
You won't leave out Navidi. I don't think you can.
All right, so that's Josh Navidi in. And you don't think you can leave out Tipperick?
No.
Obviously, this is against Australia, so I think you're going to need a mobile,
yeah,
a really mobile back row. And then Toby.
What a back row that is.
What side that is. You can't grumble at that. If we can keep all these players fit, that is some side. So
we've never seen a side quite like that.
Well, I mean, we've seen the Grand Slam side, which was very similar to it. But
yeah, but there's little tweaks.
They are little tweaks. Right, and then I think you'd have Elliot D on the bench as the backup hooker. I think your backup loose head then is Rob Evans. And imagine bringing him on after 55 minutes, raring to go, or 60 minutes. And you've got Samson Lee or Dylan Lewis. Tough, isn't it?
I'd probably go Dylan Lewis, you know, against Australia, wouldn't you?
Yeah, so that's probably a good shout. And then second row cover.
Corey.
Yeah, Corey. Back row, Moriarty then, is it?
Yeah.
So no room for Wainwright, who we've not even mentioned yet.
I wonder whether Wainwright will...
He's a bolter, man, I'm telling you. Yeah. He'll be really close to these sides. Because someone will get injured along the way, and he will feature in a World Cup game, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
And then I think you will have Thomas Williams on the bench.
And we got Bigger.
And then Dan Bigger. And Liam Williams. What about that? that's not a bad way to finish, is it? Last week we ended up on a really kind of downward really bit of momentum, notes. Didn't we? And that's a really upbeat way to finish the season down with a nice juicy look ahead to an amazing World Cup.
We'll have to keep that page now then.
I'll keep that page and we'll even tweet it and see how many of these we got right. But if anything close to that side gets out on the pitch, I think we've got a damn good chance of having a really good World Cup.
Yeah, I can't imagine Australia wanting to play that side.
No, I can't. There you have it. What a beautiful way to end this season. Thank you very much. Firstly, thanks to you, Dan. Thanks for putting in another big shift this season. Thank you to all of you who have listened. Thank you to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. Thank you to anyone who follows us on social media, and you can do that at Twitter by following us at Attacking Scrum. Like our Facebook page and join the Facebook group, Wales Rugby Fans. More and more people get stuck into that as we get closer to the World Cup, and follow us on Instagram, Welsh Rugby Attacking Scrum. We will be back with some specials over the summer to get you in the mood for the World Cup, and we should have some really exciting guests to help us do that. Some players who've been there and done that in World Cup scenarios. So that is going to be one. Well, there's going to be several episodes you're going to want to make sure you listen to. So yeah, just again, big thank you to everyone who's listened. Keep spreading the words, and we'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon. Podcast Network.